sunshine. Give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing Mountain Dew. So give me my good friends. Give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties! Welcome back to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive back into the series that started it all.
Yay!
We're so excited to be here discussing A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah.
Oh, we're so excited. And just a reminder, we'll be breaking each book up into multiple episodes so we can really take our time with this incredible story and journey.
Yeah.
But before we give our official spoiler warning, we do also just want to thank everyone who's taken the time to rate and review the show. It's so helpful, and we're sending you a big hug if you have not done so yet. Please take a moment to do so. It really means so much to us.
Yeah.
Also, Patreon. Oh my goodness, what a month on Patreon. If you've read this book, you understand the significance of Asriel's bonus chapter, and we are covering it detail by detail, line by line over on Patreon. That is a part of our SJM series for Tier 2. We're so excited about that. Also, for Tier 2 this month, you are getting a cauldron chat from yours truly, covering the Dusk Court. Again, if you've read these books, you understand the importance, and I will be covering that in detail for you over on Patreon as well. Also for Tier 1, so both tiers, we'll be covering Bridgerton. Hello, Benedict. We are entering Season 4. We'll be covering Part 1 of Season 4, all four episodes, over on Patreon. And also, you'll be getting a book chat from us this month covering The Wild Card by Stephanie Archer. The Vancouver Storm series has consistently been one of our favorite hockey romance series, so we're very excited to cover this book 5 in that series by Stephanie Archer. As always, both tiers get our main feed episodes one day early and ad-free, and if you are a member of Tier 2, you get the video of every episode. So come on over and join the party. We would love to have you at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. All right, Kim, speaking of Patreon, let's shout out some patrons.
Let's do. So one of the many benefits of being one of our Tier 2 book bitches on Patreon is that you get a very special shout out in one of our episodes. So in this week's episode, we are going to be shouting out Misty Day, Brittany Peterson, and Samantha Downey.
Hi.
Thank you guys so much. We love you so much.
We love you so much. You are incredible. You're our Valkyries. We love you, love you.
Yes, you're our Valkyries. Oh, I love that.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Okay. All right, listeners, consider this your official spoiler warning for the entire ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. Woo. Also, at the end of this episode, we have our mastermind section where we take a look at all of Sarah's series as a whole and draw upon parallels and theorize and Easter eggs. It's so much fun.
Bah.
But don't you worry, that's at the very end. We will give an additional spoiler warning before we dive in.
Sure will.
So, without further ado, let's get back to Prithian and chat about A Court of Silver Flames.
Here we go!
Woo!
Let's go! All right.
Okay, book besties, we are going to kick off this episode discussing some family dynamics. And of course, in this instance, I am talking about our three Archeron sisters, Feyre, Elaine, and Nesta.
Yes.
Now, at the end of ACOR, we were on an upward trajectory, okay? There's this beautiful bonding moment when Feyre rescues Elaine and Nesta runs to her and thanks her for sacrificing and saving Elaine, and she's sobbing and they all sleep in that tent that night together.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
But then
their father dies at the end of the book, and Nesta, as we've discussed, has fully taken on that guilt that she didn't do enough. Her father dying is really the start of her descent and pushing everyone away.
Yeah.
And Cassian is chatting with Feyre at one point in this book, and he's like, why can't you and Nesta just get along? Like, what is it about you guys?
Yeah.
And Feyre says, I have no idea. I mean, it was always that way with us and our mother. She only had an interest in Nesta. She ignored me and saw Elaine as barely more than a doll to dress up, but Nesta was hers. Our mother made sure we knew it. Or she just cared so little what we thought or did that she didn't bother to hide it from us. Resentment and long-held pain laced every word that a mother would do such a thing to her children. God, her mom sucks.
She's the worst.
She's the worst.
The worst. Oh my God.
Ugh. But when we fell into poverty, when I started hunting, it got worse. Our mother was gone and our father wasn't exactly present. He wasn't fully there. So it was me and Nesta always at each other's throats. And she basically is like, it's just a mess. It's such a tangled mess.
Oh my God. And this just absolutely segues into this quote that I just read today from Wings and Embers, and I just have to plug it in here really quickly.
Okay, do it.
So Wings and Embers, also if you're not aware, is the bonus chapter of Akamath that is a 16-page deleted scene from Akamath between Cassian and Nesta. It is absolutely delicious. Absolutely incredible.
Oh my God.
I can't even tell you. It's incredible. It's incredible. So if you have not read this, absolutely go do so immediately.
Yeah.
And you can find it various places online. Just Google it. But also we have it available for free over on our Patreon. Okay. So this takes place roughly in the middle of Akamath.
Okay.
But so telling with Nesta's baseline mentally and also the family dynamics here. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So she's thinking about her actions back in the cottage and she describes them as her cowardice, selfishness, her rage that had consumed her, so that she wanted them all to starve just to see if their useless father would bother to save them. And then little Feyre had stepped in and Nesta had hated her for it too, that Feyre had done the unthinkable and kept them alive. So like that's where we are before even she's turned into Fey, before Elaine was taken, before the father was killed. And she goes on to be like, I didn't know what to do with the rage. I felt it all too keenly, too sharply, hated and cared, loved and dreaded more than other people, she sometimes thought. Yeah, it's such a mess, the sisters. But that is like where she was even the base of it, where she was like, I was so mad and stubborn and upset that like he wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then little Feyre took it upon herself. But my stubbornness and anger, I couldn't go back on that. I couldn't like be like, well, that didn't matter to help her.
Right.
So then I hated her for doing it.
God, that's a mess.
And like, God, do I not agree with it? But
no,
it is a mess. It is an absolute mess.
I don't understand why she would be mad at Feyre for saving them. Like the alternative was that they die.
She hated her father for not stepping up.
Right. That's valid.
And so she was like, I'm so angry and stubborn at you that I'm just going to sit here with my arms crossed until you do something. And then Feyre was like, we are dying.
Yeah.
I must then go. And I think then she was so deep in her, like, I'm sitting here with my arms crossed stubbornness that I've like stood this ground that if I go back and I'm like, okay, fine, you're right, I will help you. We should do something to make sure we don't die. Then it would feel like her almost, I don't know, giving up, like her stubbornness. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like her holding on to that.
Sure.
Does it make sense? Not valid. Absolutely awful sibling behavior.
Truly awful.
Yeah. That's the beginning, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you're so right. Like this tangled mess was way before a lot of the stuff that's happened.
Yes. And even that quote with the mother, all of it. Like, oh God.
Truly. Yeah. And so then Nesta finally starts training with Cassian. She realizes quickly just how weak she is and how she lacks a lot of the natural skill set that Feyre had. She said, hunting to keep them fed had taught Feyre that skill set. Hunting while Nesta had stayed home safe and warm and let Feyre venture into that forest alone.
Yep.
Those skills Feyre had honed had allowed her to survive against the High Fae and all their terrors. But Feyre only had them because of what she'd been forced to do, because Nesta hadn't been the one to do it, to step up.
Yep. See, now that's hard because it's like she's mad at herself for not doing it. And we as the reader are mad at her for not doing it as well.
Agree. Yes, I am.
That's why this book was even hard, because it's the whole trilogy being like, I don't forgive her.
Right. No, because you should have helped her, or at least not like actively worked against her and been hateful to her.
Oh, and that's like, I truly cannot even.
No, I can't get over that.
It's hard for me to even think of that as canon, because I can be like, okay, we're going through some trauma here, Nesta.
Sure.
Really working to try to give you the benefit of the doubt in some granular of a way. But yeah, when we think about her calling her a peasant and being like, well, I want to buy shoes, is like, I have to act like that doesn't exist, or this journey feels for naught.
Agreed. Because I'm like, that's abhorrent.
Yeah. But I do think this leads to her relationship with Feyre in the way that, the same way she said here, like how she feels about Feyre in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Silver Flames, I don't think Nesta hates Feyre, but I think she hates what Feyre makes her feel. She hates being around Feyre because Feyre makes her feel this.
Yeah.
And she hates who she is around Feyre because she feels this, and then she becomes this.
Oh, that's so true, Christina.
She doesn't hate Feyre. She hates this.
Yeah.
You know?
She hates a mirror that Feyre forces her to hold up to herself.
Exactly.
Because I think Nesta feels so guilty for how she failed Feyre. She did. Like, Elaine and Nesta failed Feyre.
They did.
And so Nesta's like, yeah, I know. And that's why I can't look at Feyre, because I'm so consumed by the guilt and the hatred whenever I look at her, like what we did to her and how we failed her and we didn't help her.
And those are uncomfy. Those are difficult feelings. And when Nesta feels a difficult feeling, she feels it so keenly and so sharply and deeply that then it's so uncomfortable that she reverts to a comfortable emotion for herself, which is anger, and which is lashing out.
Yeah, so true.
And retreating.
Yeah.
And that's why their relationship is where it is, because this is what's been going on.
Right. You know? No one's going to break that cycle until we get to, obviously, later in the book.
Yeah.
So speaking of Elaine and Nesta, there's also obviously a very interesting dynamic there. Mm. And Nesta is training with Cassian and she's opening up about her upbringing and how she took dance lessons as a girl. And Cassian makes a joke about how she must have been her father's princess. Mm. And Nesta says, no, Elaine was his princess. Even Feyre was more his princess than I ever was. And what were you? I was my mother's creature. She said it was such cold it nearly froze her tongue. Cassian said carefully, what was she like? A worse version of me. Friends, I'm going to be honest with you. I struggle to picture that. I struggle. I mean, like, I see it in what Nesta has shared about her mother. Like,
yes.
I totally get that, but that terrifies me.
The use of the word creature here was very telling.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a very good use of that word in the way she looks at herself. That's what she's talking about her childhood.
Yeah.
She's like, I was my mother's little, like, creature that she created.
She truly was, like, a caged animal, even from childhood.
Yes. Oh, my God. Exactly. That's such a good parallel, Kim. Yes, exactly. And her saying a worse version of me, oh, wow, there's a lot to unpack.
That's chilling is what that is.
You know what it is? It's chilling. And I keep going back to, like, they had no stable person who loved them.
No.
They had no person showing them what love was.
Nope.
They had no one looking out for them. Like, even the sister dynamics is one thing, but their parents, both of them,
suck.
Like, I know Papa Archeron came back with the ships.
Yeah. And you know that gets me every time. I don't really know why.
I'm happy he came back with the ships. He named them. It was very sweet. However,
I cry every time, but he still sucks.
But he sucks. He let this happen too.
Agreed.
Yes, I know he was off doing the spice trade, but the fact that she was like, I was my mother's creature, like, to get to that level.
Where was he?
What was he doing?
And, like, the grandmother was also terrible. Clearly, there's some generational trauma going on, is what I really think we've uncovered.
Yeah.
Is that the grandmother was awful, the mother was awful, so then Nesta was awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank God we're breaking that cycle, hopefully.
Yes.
Okay, I want to spend just a second contrasting Feyre's trauma arc, which was obviously a lot of internalized guilt, and that led to her disassociating, and contrast that with Nesta's trauma arc, which is a lot of externalized rage, and that leading to kind of self-destruction.
Ah, well said.
And I know we touched upon this a little bit in part one, but I just think it's so interesting how different the sisters' trauma arcs are, where Feyre, everything was internalized. She took everything in and she shut down. And Nesta's lashing out and, like, raging at everybody. It's so interesting.
Yes, that's so well said. And it's so true. Mm. Because really, they both went through trauma. Mm. They both had these traumatic childhoods.
Yeah.
In the same house in different ways, very different ways.
Right.
And now the way we're seeing them deal with it as adults.
Mm. Yes.
And through their love and through their mates is totally different.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned in book one, Feyre's is more palatable.
It is more palatable.
And so it's hard.
That was a big come to Jesus moment with myself where I was like, wow, well, that's not really fair because that's not how trauma looks for everybody. You know, some people do shut down for sure. And some people do lash out.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting that Sarah wrote the sisters this way, how different they all are.
Yes.
In so many ways, right? And I think Elaine is even different from Feyre and Nesta, you know?
Oh, 100%.
I think how she's dealt with it is different as well. And it makes me excited to see because I think Elaine, also, we're going to be in a completely different place with Elaine by the time we get to her book. She's going to be through, I think, a lot of this stuff that Nesta is working through right now.
Agreed.
So I'm just really interested to see this. It's just, you know, the sibling dynamics in this series are so interesting. And like you said, Christina, they have not had a safe foundation in their childhood.
Mm-mm. No.
And so what they have, what we really have here is three sisters who only know how to navigate a relationship through hardship and grief.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to have, there's no healthy foundations at all.
No. And between them either. And we kind of talked about this in Frost and Starlight as well, but there's no individual friendships and foundations either.
Mm.
So the way they have common ground is to kind of worry about the other one.
Yes.
So that's how Nesta and Feyre found common ground in Akkor, was to worry about Elaine. And then now Nesta's on the outside and Feyre and Elaine are worrying about her. And it is just so horrifically hard for Nesta to accept.
She hates it.
She hates it that they are now bonding.
Yeah.
And that she is on the outside when she thinks she's done everything for Elaine, which she has. Too much, some would say.
Too much, yeah.
But the dynamics are so complicated.
Well, and like Feyre was left out in Akatar. Like it was Nesta and Elaine in the cabin, cozy and fun together.
Exactly.
They want the new boots and Feyre's out in the forest by herself and Nesta's fine with that.
Exactly.
But when Nesta's on the outside, she's like, oh wait, I don't like this. This isn't fun. And then Elaine and Feyre are like, yeah, no shit.
Welcome to our life. And I would argue, I'm wondering if in Elaine's book, we're going to see her kind of be like, I've been on the outside this whole time because you guys just treat me like I'm should just be quiet in the corner. You like infantilize me.
Yes.
I'm not asked to go on missions or
Poor Elaine.
I've been separated like that for a long time, you know?
I bet that is going to be such a big part of it because, God, we see it later in this book that Elaine like steps up to Nesta and is like, stop babying me. I am an adult woman.
That is one of my favorite things where she's like, you can't have both. You can't judge me for having a small life and also not want me to step up and do something.
Oh.
Pick one.
Elaine. Damn it, Sarah. How do you do this? It's crazy.
How? You are
making
a witch.
Us care about Elaine. She's a witch. She's practicing witchcraft.
Witchcraft.
Oh, Lordy. Okay, but you know what? We got to talk about Eris, Christina. We got to talk about Eris.
Oh, Eris. Aerie? Do we have a nickname for her?
I don't love Aerie.
Aerie's not great. It's not great. We'll work on it. It's
workshop. If you have a fun nickname for Aerie, let us know. Let's workshop that.
Aerster? Okay. But yes, before we dig into Aerie, though, it's absolutely worth saying that A Court of Silver Flames isn't actually where his arc begins. We're not starting from scratch here with, is Aerys going to get a redemption arc? We've been getting hints about this for a good long while.
Yeah.
You've heard us. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
And all of it's coming together now where we're really getting some more specific groundwork here that maybe he's not the monster as much as we thought he was. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's just got this really, truly horrific home life and learned how to survive it, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not as lucky in his friends as the Inner Circle.
As Rhysand, yeah.
And he's still frustrating. He's still Morally Gray.
Yep.
Our leads still don't really know if they can trust him for a good amount of time in this book.
A good chunk of time, yeah.
There's also the part where they are like, are you being possessed by the crown? He's not. Do we trust him? Do we not? What's
right.
happening?
What?
And in that whole thing, he's like, God damn it, guys. Like, what am I supposed to do to prove this to you?
Come on!
I love it.
I do too.
Okay, but ultimately he's playing a very dangerous game. And we do have to remember, like, the level of that. There's a part at the end where it says that Baron tortured him. Like, we cannot say enough how bad Baron is and how bad his home life is and all of it. And that he's trying to navigate that and also play this game. Like, it's actually very impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there are things about his past with Mor that he is going to have to explain in a very specific way. It's going to have to be groundbreaking new information for us to fully forgive him.
Yep.
But I do have faith it's coming.
For sure.
We also do get some fun big clues in this book specifically for a future full redemption arc that I pulled here. I'm excited to read.
Yeah.
Number one, this is wild. Quote, Eris must have sacrificed something big to spare Mor from her father's visit. Rhysand looked into Eris's mind, and we know that Eris went out of his way to buy Mor time so that Kyr would not visit Velaris.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's a huge gesture, and also sacrificing something big.
What did he sacrifice?
Got good guy written all over it. Okay, these two, though. Guys, these two. This is it. This is what really seals the deal.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Cassian says, quote, you know, Eris, I think you might be a decent male deep down, trapped in a terrible situation. Number one. Number two, also from Cassian.
Uh-huh.
Quote, I grew up surrounded by monsters. I've spent my existence fighting them. And I see you, Eris. You're not one of them. Not even close. I think you might even be a good male. And then Cassian opened the door, turning from Eris's curled lip. You're just too much of a coward to act like one.
Wow,
this is good. I mean, if we have Cassian, who clearly we trust with our lives, on page saying, I grew up with monsters, you're not one of them, not even close, you're a good man.
And he hates Eris.
There's no coming back from here then.
I agree.
We're doing it. Eris redemption arc is coming.
Okay, also, Rhysand and Cassian are talking with Eris, and Eris says, I told you years ago what I wanted, High Lord. To seize his father's throne. Why? Cassian asked. Eris grasped what he meant, apparently, because flame sizzled in his eyes. For the same reason I left Morrigan untouched at the border. You left her there to suffer and die, Cassian spat. Eris sneered. Did I? Perhaps you should ask Morrigan whether that is true. I think she finally knows the answer. If I don't get a goddamn answer to this in ACOTAR 6, I will need to be checked into a mental institution. Sarah, I can't live like this. You have to tell us. You have to.
We can't live like this.
Please, God.
Oh, God. Okay, you know what feels egregious is the little hints to it.
She's teasing us. She's taunting us.
That's exactly what this is. Sarah's like, hey.
Did I? I think she finally knows the answer.
What do you mean? She hasn't even been in this damn book. What are you talking about? Did you go to her little her little place, her little secret island with the horses?
Her little cabin?
Were you there? At the estate with the horses?
Did y'all go on a horsey ride and have a conversation? Because I don't know what you mean. What do you mean she finally knows the answer?
How?
How?
What?
Why?
What do you mean?
When?
Also, shouldn't she know the answer? She's the truth.
What do you mean? It happened to her. She was there.
Also, she was there. Okay, I can't get over the fact that this all centers around, like, lies and confusion, and she's the Morgan and the truth.
She's the Morgan that her power is truth. But, okay.
But fine. My main thing I keep going back to when we talk about this is the untouched. I can't get past it. Every time it's about she's untouched. I didn't touch her. I wouldn't have touched you. And he tells the soldiers, don't touch her. No one touch her. I think there's some sort of magic or there's something about the Autumn Court lands. And maybe he knows because of his mother.
Okay.
If there's like an agreement or a bond or something like a, some sort of thing somehow with the magic. The second you touch them, then they're like your property.
For sure.
They can't leave.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
And I think that it's something about the lift her untouched just feels too specific.
Oh, it is specific. It's absolutely for a reason. You're right, Christina. There has to be something there with like, I didn't touch her. I wouldn't have touched you.
Touched you. Yeah.
I mean, she did have something nailed through her abdomen. I understand that wasn't Eris, but I think like you said, Christina, we're going to have to get a reason and the reason is going to have to be good.
Yeah.
And detailed and like a certain level of like, okay, we can move past this as the reader.
Agreed.
Because right now I'm like, Eris, you're still kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And I don't love that.
I it's hard because like, yes, like I said, we're going to get a redemption arc. I don't doubt that. But sure. Also, I had a real hard time with him in this book calling Cassian names. Don't you speak to McCassian like that.
Don't you speak to our Cass like that.
Don't you do
He's our baby angel. How dare you?
Yeah.
He's been through enough. I don't like you calling him a dog. You know, it's so gross the way he talks to Cassian in this book.
Right?
I don't like it.
That was hard for me to get past. You know, Eris, we try to root for you, but then you do stuff like this. And it's
exactly. Like work with us. Us, man.
Help us help you.
You.
God. Okay. Speaking of, oh Lord, you know who needs help is Tam Tam.
Tam needs help. He needs therapy. He needs to phone a friend.
I'm going to say this right now. I think he might be too far gone to this point to come back.
I agree.
So let's talk about the Spring Court and Timmy Tam. So
Timmy Tam really gets me. I love that a lot.
I've used that one in a while. Okay. Oh God. Okay. So we actually barely get any Tamlin on paper in this book because he's too busy being in his BC form. But he is referenced by other characters. There's a lot of concern about the Spring Court. All in all, though, the general consensus is he is not doing well.
No.
Tamlin is the most unwell he could be.
Yep.
And, you know, like we discussed in our Akafas coverage in those episodes, the Spring Court has fallen into absolute disarray. And so Nesta goes in this book, so we get to see it through Nesta's point of view. And she also notes that it's not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's overgrown. The magic, if you remember, is tied to Tamlin. So if he's running around in his beastie form and wallowing in his own despair and not able to get himself together even to like eat or function, then it makes sense that the Spring Court, its physical appearance in the lands that's tied to him is a parallel to how he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because remember, he has to fuck the magic into the land at Calamity. Oh, how is he going to do that this year? Who's going to do that? Maybe he's not. That's why the land's going into disarray because there's...
I don't think he is because wouldn't that be bestiality if a fae has to... If he's in his beast form, like his true beast form.
Yeah.
And he won't come out.
Right. That's tough.
He won't shift. That's tough.
How's that work?
I'd be like, I'm good. I'm not going to sign up for that.
I didn't sign up for this. I'm okay with a mask.
Sure.
I'm not okay with this. Yeah.
I thought I was having sex with a High Lord and you're an animal. So I'm actually not interested in that.
I don't even know you're a High Lord. Are you just
And
an
our
animal?
Contract is null and void. So I'm not going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm exiting the cave. Stage left. Okay, now I want to read this quote. And Kim, my bestie.
Yeah.
I want you to listen to this.
Okay.
With the mindset of Beauty and the Beast in mind.
Okay.
They say a beast prowls these lands now. A beast with keen green eyes and golden fur. Some people think the beast has forgotten his other shape. So long has he spent in his monstrous form. And though he roams these lands, he does not see or care for the neglect he passes, the lawlessness, the vulnerability. Even his manner has fallen into disrepair. Half eaten by thorns.
Thorns.
Though rumors fly that he destroyed it himself.
That's Beauty and the Beast.
Thank you.
That's the beast.
This is giving the beast way more than book one.
Absolutely.
So, which gets us to, there is a theory that maybe the Beauty and the Beast retelling has actually, like now we're in it. He is the beast now and Elaine is actually Belle.
I love this. I love it.
I love it because I love a Disney movie parallel.
Oh, yeah, we're millennials. We love a Disney movie parallel.
However, personally, I don't love Elaine ending up with Tamlin.
I don't either.
For reasons. I think that realistically, in my ideal world, she would resurrect Spring. She would make the Spring Court into what it is and use her power, which we don't know much about. yet. We can theorize, but to like Moana the lands,
yeah,
and make it into what it once was, you know?
Sure.
And in that, then the land would maybe give her that magic, all that stuff. I think her ending up with Tamlin, it's just too messy. All of the dynamics there. And like, we know he's also currently still really upset about Feyre being pregnant. We're not resolved enough with him being engaged to her sister. I just think it's too weird and messy. Okay, don't come for me. I'm not saying I would like this to happen to Tamlin. I don't think he's a villain, but I could see, possibly, Tamlin sacrificing himself in some way and dying, and that's his redemption arc.
I agree. I would like to see that as well. I don't want him to die, but I think it would be an interesting choice for Sarah, and it would be an interesting, noble sacrifice for Tamlin.
Yeah.
And I just think, what's he gonna do? You know what I mean? Like, what else is he gonna do? Just prowl around for the rest of his days? That doesn't... What are we doing here, Tamlin? You know what I mean?
What are we doing? And I also don't know if anyone can even fix the Spring Court.
Right.
Until he's not around.
Okay, but riddle me this.
Tell me. What?
Elaine could Moana the lands.
Yeah.
And rule it with her mate, Lucien, after Tamlin dies.
Precisely.
Because there's no one else to run the Spring Court. And Lucien was like...
Or.
What?
Tamlin doesn't even have to die.
Okay.
Because Lucien could use his birthbound magic from Helion.
Okay.
To spell cleaver the magic between Tamlin. Like, release him. From his
High Lordness. Shackles.
You know?
Yes.
Because once he finds out he can be a spellcleaver like his dad.
His papa.
His papa. Yeah.
Okay, wait. No, I love this.
I love this.
I love this because this, that way Tamlin doesn't have to die. He can go be free.
He can, roam around. Do whatever he wants.
Do you remember him telling Feyre that he didn't want to be High Lord? Didn't he tell Feyre that in book one?
Yeah.
That like he never wanted to be the High Lord and it just kind of like happened or something?
Well, yeah.
Or is that Rhys?
No, I think.
I swear I remember him talking to Feyre and being like, I never really wanted this.
No, I think you're right. I think he's like, I don't want to do this, but I have to.
And like, he's not great at it, you guys. He's not like the tithe I don't love.
Nope.
He's just not great.
We need a full rebrand of the Spring Court. We top to bottom.
I think we need a top to bottom, take it back down to the roots.
Refresh.
And then we come back up.
Yeah.
And who could do that? Elaine.
So another reason, I'm so excited to read you these. All right, here we go.
Okay,
some more quotes that are really fun to pull. Kim, get ready.
Okay.
These are quotes that I do think back up maybe Elaine in some way ending up in the Spring Court, okay?
Okay.
Number one, this one really telling. So from the ball, this is Cassian talking about Elaine. Elaine in black was ridiculous. Yes, she was beautiful, but the color of her long sleeve modest gown leached the brightness from her face. It wore her rather than the other way around. And he knew the cruelty of the Hewn City troubled her, but she hadn't hesitated to come. He'd never once in the 2 years he'd known her found Elaine to be plain. But wearing black, no matter how much she claimed to be a part of this court, it sucked the life from her. But the claim to be a part of this court, wow, really interesting groundwork that we're laying there.
Claimed, yeah. And in the black sucking the life from her, like she doesn't belong in the night court.
The night court, in the black clothes, in the dark clothes. It's leeching the brightness from her face. Like, okay, all right.
Guys.
Two more. This is another fun quote from Nesta.
This is the biggest one for me.
Elaine would love this place. Nesta felt like a storm cloud standing amid it all, but Elaine, the Spring Court had been made for someone like her. Made for someone like her.
Your Honor, I rest my case. I rest my case, Your Honor. The Spring Court had, why would Sarah put that in there, you guys? This is not an accident.
No.
Come on.
The Spring Court had been made for someone like her.
I don't even know what else we need to say. I mean, come on.
Well, also, Elaine's scent, apparently, lingered in the Redstone Hall like a promise of spring.
Guys.
She smells like spring.
And again, we're not saying that she has to end up with Tamlin for her to be tied to the Spring Court. I do think there are ways that Elaine could rule the Spring Court or be tied to the Spring Court in some way that does not mean that she has to be with Tamlin. Okay, so when we give you this theory, it's literally just about Elaine and the Spring Court. It's not about Tamlin.
And also, bringing in Azriel, I still stand by, I think that Azriel and Elaine are going to be together at the beginning of whatever journey this next journey is. I don't think they're going to end up together.
Oh, interesting.
But I do think that we're going to get them together. I think it's going to be a Sarah classic theme of like you have the person who you are with at a certain time in your life when you need them at that point in your life. And they both need each other and that's going to happen. And then they're going to like, it's going to make them into who they need to be who they need to become.
Sure.
And I am hoping that maybe it's going to be a friendly, like, hey, you're great, but this isn't working out situation because they got to be real close in the inner circle the rest of their lives.
True.
Well, maybe not too close if she's in spring.
Exactly.
But I really don't see Azriel going to spring. But again, I do see maybe, I think we've laid enough groundwork, they're going to be together for a little bit. And then I think she's going to end up in spring. Why else would we say this like this? Why?
I don't know. And I do feel like Sarah also could very easily set up for Lucien to take over the spring court, regardless of, like you said, he could spell cleave Tamlin or Tamlin could die. It makes so much more sense to me. I just see Elaine. Elaine is spring. Like she is, guys, she loves to garden.
She is.
Flowers.
We've done that from the beginning. You know, there were flowers on her drawer.
Exactly, Christina. Exactly.
And everyone's things on their drawer are important to where they end up.
Absolutely.
So
I love this. I think this is fascinating. I cannot wait to see what Sarah does with
Elaine. And also, it's freezing here right now, so like I'm dying for spring. But yeah. Like, God, I'd love a spring book. Bring spring back to life.
Bring spring.
Lovely. Oh, yeah. Goodness gracious. Yeah. All right, let's talk about...
You know what's not so lovely, though?
Yeah.
Is Rhysand in this book versus the first three. Zero part of me wants to discuss this because I love Rhysand. I love him.
Same.
And it is no secret that we will ride at dawn for our man Rhysand, okay? He is our high lord and savior, and we will die on that hill any day of the week.
And that's not going to change, no matter what.
That's not going to... No. No.
We do have feelings, but still.
We do have feelings.
That remains.
That remains, but it does make some of his behavior in this book so out of character for us who's gone on this journey with Rhysand.
Yes.
Yeah, so Rhysand does not like Nesta, okay? And he does not like her. And yes, it is Nesta's POV, so of course we're seeing it through her eyes. But even Cassian calls Rhysand out on this. And Rhysand has a quote that he says to Nesta weeks after Gwyn has been training with her and Cassian. And Nesta has been nothing but kind to all the priestesses in the library. And we think that if she was being a bitch, Clotho would have said something to Rhysand.
Yeah.
Like, would have reported back, like, hey, this isn't working. Nesta's being ugly to the priestesses, which hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So Rhysand shows up to training at one point. And he looks at Nesta and he says, you are to treat Gwyn with kindness and respect. Nesta notes the harshness in his tone when he says this.
It's rough. It's rough.
Rhysand?
Yeah.
And obviously at this point, we, the reader, know that Nesta is trying to be better.
Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate, I will say, how is Rhysand supposed to know that? Because
exactly.
He's really only seen one side of Nesta. He's not at training. Guys, he's the High Lord. Like, I'm sorry, but he has better things to do.
Booked and busy.
He's like, Cassian, that's your job. You're dealing with Nesta.
He is currently so booked and busy with trying to save him, his mate, and his child's life.
Right.
Which we'll get to another time.
Yes.
But I totally agree with you that one, he does not know that. And the last time he saw Nesta, she was so cruel to everyone around her.
Yes.
She was cruel to every single person who spoke to her. She said cruel things to them.
Right.
So, like, I don't blame him for showing up here, seeing Gwyn, who he knows is very vulnerable. She's gone through trauma.
Yeah.
He feels a sense of need to protect the priestesses who are in the library, not only because of the place, the foundation he's built for them, but also his trauma there.
Yeah, right.
And then he's like, oh, no, sorry. Please, Nesta, you have to be nice to her.
Yeah.
I see it. I don't love it.
I agree. I understand where he's coming from because, like you said, he is so protective of them. You know, it's hard. I'm like, well, Nesta, we did put ourselves in this situation. You're not kind.
Yeah. But then also, like, back to what we were saying, like, is it out of character, though? The Rhysand from other books, like, would he have showed up and been like, okay, well, I gotta watch this.
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean? Like, would he have showed up maybe and watched or said something to Cassian?
For sure.
I don't know. I feel like there's other ways he could have done it.
For sure. I think he could have said something to Cassian and been like, hey, can you please just make sure that Nesta is... And then Cassian would have, and you'll get to this in a second, but like Cassian would have been like, yeah, she's good. I've got it handled.
Yeah. Or be sneaky. Roll your sleeves up and do training for the day or something.
You know, I do think that there is an aspect of Rhysand as the High Lord that like just... he isn't likable. And I think we see that in other of Sarah's series where like sometimes as the leader, you have to not be likable and you have to like say the hard things and do the things that don't make you popular.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I actually don't think it's out of character for Rhysand because we've seen him do it before.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get where he's coming from, but it's like when Cassian's like, everybody hates you. You're like, that's not nice to say, but he's not wrong.
Yeah.
And Rhysand's just like, I'm going based off your past behavior. Like,
what I know.
I think that's a fair assumption. It's mean.
No, I agree. It's one of the things that's most frustrating about Nesta is she pushes everyone away and wants to push everyone away and says, leave me alone. And I'm being mean to you because I want to push you away. And then she gets mad when it happens.
Right. Like, how is that fair?
Yeah, it's hard. And again, I'm sure it's also a plot device of we've seen her make growth and then we see how this triggers her to have a step back. But I do love that Cassian, again, as the sweetie mate that he is, defends her. So he says to Rhysand, quote, you saw Gwyn and thought the worst of Nesta. She's treated her and Emery with kindness. I'm pissed off that you can't seem to believe even one good thing about her, that you refuse to fucking believe one good thing about her. Was it necessary to bait her like that? Regret glimmered in Rhys's eyes. Cassian went on, you're not making it easier. Let her build these bonds and stay the hell out of it. Rhys blinked. I'm sorry, I will. Wow.
Guys, he immediately apologizes and he immediately is like, you're right. I'm sorry. Hello? Accountability.
Great exchange.
Tamlin?
Oh my God, he would never. Can you imagine if Lucien said anything to him like this? He'd be like, you are out of line. Get in your place.
He trashed the study for the 19th time that week.
Because, like, I didn't ask you when Lucien said barely, like, maybe we should post it.
Right.
Yeah. I love this interaction because I love seeing Cassian so fiercely defend her.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
It is.
But also, I do love Reese being like, fine, you're right. That was my bad.
I like this conversation.
I'm a little worked up for other reasons.
I'm sorry. I'm a little bit stressed out that me and my mate and our baby might die. So you're right. I'm not at my best.
You don't know that right now?
Right.
But that's where this is coming from. So
we're all projecting.
Oh, don't worry. We have lots of opinions on that, but we will get to.
Yeah, we'll touch on that later. So another aspect of this is that we're not in Feyre's POV. So like we said, we're getting a very different biased opinion of him. And honestly, that's okay. And I think it's realistic for Nesta and him to butt heads. And it's okay for her to not love him the way Feyre did.
Yeah.
Nesta didn't go on the same journey as Feyre. She didn't experience Akamath and see Rhysand's wonderful side. But the problem is that we, the readers, have.
Yeah.
We did go on that journey with Feyre. We do see the wonderful side of Rhysand. And we feel this like kinship and like loving towards Rhysand, and it makes it really difficult for us to swallow these situations because we're like, this is not the Rhysand that we know and love, and it's like very unsettling.
Unsettling is a great word for it.
To have this like tension between them.
Yeah, it just feels like it's a flip. Like it feels unsettling. We knew him and know him, and now it's like, this feels like not him. It's confusing.
Right. I agree. And I think, you know, it's just interesting to see him through another lens. It's interesting to see him through Nesta's eyes.
Totally.
We are not going to talk about the pregnancy today, but trust and believe we will have a in-depth discussion about that. Also in the shower yesterday, I was having a discussion with myself, as you're wont to do in the shower. Maybe that's just me.
Nope,
but
me too.
I think I figured out why Sarah put that plot thing in with Feyre's pregnancy and the complications. Mm. I think I figured out why she did it.
Okay.
And I don't like it, but we're going to save it for when we talk about her pregnancy and the issues and Rhys not telling her. I think I figured out why in the first place Sarah even had Feyre have a complication with her pregnancy.
Okay. You know?
So, little tease.
Yeah. Ooh, leave me at a cliffhanger. Because God, do we have feelings about that?
We sure do.
Let's move along to the House of Wind. Yeah. I cannot tell you how much fun I had this reread with the character of the house.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. I love it so much.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most underrated parts of Akasov, I think, is this House of Wind being its own character. It just feels like instead of a setting, it's its own little person, like its little being.
It is,
and
yeah.
And really because when Nesta is brought there, she needs a friend and she like she wishes does. For a friend.
Yeah.
And her magical power makes the house into her friend. It's so beautiful.
I love it so much.
Oh my God. And then we get to see the house like taking care of her.
Yeah.
Like making sure she eats and it's very persistent about the meal times and getting those calories in because you're training upstairs. What's
That's
going
right,
on?
Girl.
And then yes. It's like offended when Nesta refuses and then it makes her apologize. It's so good.
It's so
funny.
And I
love like at the beginning, she's like, can I get a glass of wine? It's like, no, you can
Silence.
Have water. yeah.
Here's water. She's like, no, I don't want water. I want wine.
Water.
More water. I love it. And like, it's so good. Smut and it's dropping books God. On her bedside. Can you even imagine the joy of your house, like dropping books on your bedside table being like, here you go, girl. I gotcha.
Shut up. Also, it's so cute. I just love that that house reads smut and then Gwyn and Emery read smut and they have a whole little like girly time with it. It's
oh
just.
Oh my God. I love it.
It's what Nesta needed in that moment and all the aspects that she needed because she needed like a friend who made her feel good about reading smut and like also built her up and was also proud of her, you know?
Yeah, like was helping look after her and take care of her in a way that she could handle because it was very quietly just like, here's food.
Mm.
We're going to work on the fire. I'm going to warm your room so we don't have to have the fire on right now because you're struggling with that.
Oh, also great point.
It was quietly taking care of her. It was so
that she can handle it. Because if someone else was taking care of her to that level, she would have lashed out and been like, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah.
As we see her do, as she's wont to do. But
yes.
Also, this is one of my favorite parts regarding the house in the book. Oh my good God. So pretty much she's asked the house to help her with her fear of fires. And it's very beautiful and moving.
Yeah, it is.
And from that, then the house is proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so it lays these evergreen twigs in a path that she can follow. And it leads Nesta into the library and down to the very pit, actually, where the ravens attacked her and Feyre in Akalor.
Yes, yes.
And it's important to note here that throughout Silver Flames, there have been moments where, like, the darkness at this part of the library has seemed to, like, reach out to characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Emery notes it, and so does Gwyn, and it makes them very uneasy, and they're very scared of it. But Nesta isn't. And then we get this moment where we learn what the darkness is. And it says, quote, the heart of the house. The darkness is your heart. As if in answer, the house laid a little evergreen sprig at her feet.
Quote, a winter solstice present for me. She could have sworn a warm hand brushed her neck in answer. But your darkness, you were trying to show me, show others who you are down deep, what haunts you. You were trying to show them all those dark broken pieces because the priestesses and Emery and I were the same as you.
Oh my God.
Her heart constricted at what the house had gifted her, this knowledge. She lifted the lantern higher and blew out its flame, let the darkness sweep in and embraced it.
Wow.
I'm not afraid, she whispered into it. You are my friend. Oh my God. I'm going to start crying with this house. Okay.
So sweet.
You are my friend and my home. Thank you for sharing this with me.
Sharing this with me.
Again, Nesta could have sworn that phantom touch caressed her neck, her cheek, her brow. Happy solstice, she said into the beautiful, fractured darkness. Oh my God.
Oh my God. That is so unbelievably so beautiful. Thank you for sharing this with me. For Nesta to say that.
Growth.
The growth.
Is beautiful. Ugh. I love this entire thing that Sarah did with the house. I think it's so well done. It's such an unexpected aspect of the book. And yeah. Every time we reread it, I think we're reminded of how incredibly beautiful it is.
I couldn't love it more. Oh my God. Incredible.
I love it.
And then at the end, the house is gifted to them.
Yes.
And so it's their house.
It's their house now.
And it's so sweet.
It's so beautiful. I love it so much. Okay, let's quickly chat about Azriel, our sexy shadow singer.
Oh, I would love to.
So obviously, Azriel's not in this book a ton, of course, because Sarah's keeping him from us. And I need more of him. And Azriel is definitely the little chaperone, okay, in this book.
What a hilarious choice to do this. I loved it.
Hysterical.
Oh my God.
Hysterical. So this is that same scene from earlier when Cassian was making that sexual innuendo about using his hands not just at night, and Nesta does her whole, like, I hate you flirty banter thing.
Yeah.
And Cassian notes that he's aware Azriel probably noticed a shift in his scent. And Azriel says, you two need a chaperone up here? And Cassian thinks, yes, no, yes. And Cassian goes, I thought you were the chaperone. As threw him a wicked smile. I'm not entirely sure I'm enough. First of all, Azriel? Wicked smiling?
What?
Why am I feral at that? Like, he literally breathes and I'm like, Azriel!
He literally smiles and we're like, oh God, we're dying. A wicked smile from Azriel?
Stop it.
God, it's so
Stop
good.
Stop it, I love it so
also,
much.
Also, he's being like cheeky and funny, like, I'm not entirely sure I'm enough.
Yes!
Shut up. Oh God, it's so good!
Azriel, you're a comedian. I can't handle it.
God, you're a comedian.
He's doing stand-up.
Practically, for him.
It's so funny.
Oh my God, I loved this.
I also actually really love that Nesta is not scared of Azriel. And we know that obviously when Feyre first met Azriel, she was very like hesitant and nervous around yeah. him because he is like dark and, you know, grumpy
yeah.
and he's like our grumpy shadow singer. And it's really interesting the dynamic that him and Nesta have. I do think there is this level of kind of understanding between them. I think they're both kind of black cat energy.
Yeah. He takes the time to really think about, like, observe and, like, yes. really understand who she is before he, I think, is going to react to who she is. Do you know what I'm saying? Where I feel like
totally
the other inner circle is not really doing that.
Yeah.
Like, specific examples where, like, we learned that Azriel's never said a bad word about Nesta, never seemed inclined to start a fight with her. She saw him and was not afraid of him. There weren't many people who fit that bill. Oh, God. People being afraid of Azriel is so mean. He's so wonderful.
How could you be scared of Azriel?
I get it, like, but God.
I get it. I mean, he is meant to be scary, but, like,
you know who else isn't scared of him? Gwyn. Okay, sorry.
His shadow singer on her. That's all I'm going to say. That's canon.
You know, we'll save it for later.
We'll save it. I'm not putting any commentary on it. I'm literally just stating facts.
And you know what? Just to be fair, I'll play devil's advocate. Elaine also finds his either siphons or scars. We're not sure what she was talking about. Beautiful.
Beautiful. She doesn't seem to be scared of him.
You know, all we want is for Azriel to be happy.
That's all we want.
Just give it to us.
Absolutely. Okay, so with ACOTAR 6 and Azriel kind of like talking about this.
Yeah. It's hard to talk about ACOTAR 6 and not talk about Azriel because
yeah.
if we don't get him in ACOTAR 6, I actually really do think the fandom's gonna-
I'll find Sarah. I'll hunt
Like, him. Actually be really upset. I know we're like, oh my God, if you don't give me more in the next book, I'll kill you. Like, I actually really do think if she doesn't wrap up Elriel Gwynreal in this next book, that the fandom's actually gonna be like, I'm done with series.
Yeah, I'm actually done.
Yeah.
I can't live like this anymore. I can't do this. We have to know.
We have to know. Or at least give us something with it, you know?
Truly, yeah.
And again, we're gonna get into Gwynreal and Elriel and all of that as we continue this coverage.
Sure.
But another thing to think about when we think about Azriel in ACOTAR 6 and where his story is going is his backstory and what his past really means for him, like what's left kind of pending or unfinished for him in his story arc.
Yeah.
And I go into very in-depth detail on this in the Bat Boys Backstories Cauldron chat on Patreon.
You sure do.
But we have to remember a few things. One, Azriel's mom is still alive. Also, his horrible, evil half-brothers who burned his hands are still alive.
I need them to die.
The Bat Boys did go get, they like broke their legs and got revenge, but they're living.
Hate that.
Which is unfortunate, but I think that there's got to be something there. And then also, we've set up kind of a tentative possibility for a healing journey with Asriel in regards to his hatred toward the Illyrians and his tie to them and his heritage.
Mm.
Mainly, the only reason I say that is because he hates them so much and is so specifically like, no, they're evil, I hate them. And recent casting, you know, like, we're like, what if we send Asriel? Like, oh God, no, he'll just kill them all. Like, he hates them.
Yeah.
And we've seen Cassian hate them, but also learn to accept some pieces, learn to work with them, learn to try to make Illyrians better.
Sure.
I think there has to be some sort of acceptance of who Asriel is. And I think it's going to come from the trauma he experienced from the Illyrians.
Yeah.
And maybe that could be a parallel between him and Nesta, the acceptance of their journeys.
Yeah.
But I think there is high possibility of us getting some sort of full arc with him accepting his past trauma with his mom, brothers, and Illyrian history as we go with him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay, well, that is actually where we're going to end this episode. We are going to pick up on episode 3, where we're going to be having another mental health check-in with Nesta. We're going to discuss the Dread Trove, as well as we're going to do a little field trip over to the Bog of Urid, everybody.
Oh, what a fantastic place to visit this time of year, you know?
I've heard it's lovely.
It's fun. But don't worry, friends. There's more to this episode.
Oh, there is.
If you've read the Mass Verse, okay?
Uh-huh.
So if you haven't, ta-ta. If you have, welcome. So,
welcome.
Book besties, this is our favorite little corner of the episode, Mastermind, where
yep.
we peel back the curtain on all the brilliant foreshadowing and plot threads and Easter eggs Sarah has been planting since page one in each of her series.
Yes.
So this is your spoiler warning from here on out. In addition to ACOTAR, we'll be referencing the entire Throne of Glass and Crescent City series as they are today. Full series of those.
Yep.
So if you haven't finished those, again, ta-ta, cheers, happy reading. We love
Bye.
You. We'll see you next time. And if you're all caught up, if you read all 16 books, however many there are, let's
yep.
go.
Let's Woo! Go.
Okay. God, I'm so excited to do these. We haven't done these in so long.
I know.
So
I'm so excited.
Okay. So number one, let's start off with this working model that Rhys has in his study. Okay.
Yes.
It's this working model of the world. It's described as, quote, a massive working model of their world, the stars and planets around it. It could not only track the sun, but also tell time. And it somehow allowed Rhys to ponder the existence of life beyond their own world. Oh,
oh.
Sarah. Wow. What a thing to ponder.
Oh, Rhys Sarah said. Jubilee.
Sarah Janet Jubilee Mouse, I swear to God.
Oh.
Now, if that sounds familiar, friends, it's because the Autumn King in Crescent City has one of these as well. His is described as an Ori, which mm-hmm. apparently is like a mechanical model of the solar system.
Yeah.
But it's described as, quote, a working model of their seven planets, moons, and suns. Now, we know that he uses it to study patterns, quote, in hopes to learn about their original Fae homeland, brilliant, and the truth surrounding it. Dusk Truth. I mean, Autumn King doesn't know. But
right.
So that's where that's going. And that's the thing. They're each trying to research each other.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're connected, but it's fun. It's a really cool way for her to lay the groundwork of these like worlds overlapping.
Yeah.
And it's setting the scene for more Massverse discoveries as we go with the series.
Yeah.
Which I really think that Rhys as well as Meryl,
our girl Meryl,
are going to be key players in.
Yep.
I really think not only can she whisper in the wind, she's also researching other worlds.
She sure is. She surely is. And
so,
that's interesting. And I obviously that's put in there for a reason. I absolutely think she's going to be a key player in the whole world's overlapping Massverse moving forward.
I love thinking about Sarah writing that of Rhys researching, like pondering the possibility of other worlds in Silver Flames.
Yeah.
All the while, like this is all way far before we've gotten the end of book 2 of CC, right?
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, I'll just throw that in there. Possibility.
Let's throw him a little bone in there, a little possibility.
Rhys is pondering. Yeah, I love it.
Could
love it.
There be other life? Yes, there could.
Yes. Okay.
I am so excited to
yeah.
chat with you about this. So I was Googling pronunciations just to double check myself this morning, as I do. And I came across this theory
okay.
on Reddit about Koshe
yeah.
and the lake creature in Air of Fire. Okay.
What?
So in okay. Air of Fire, Aelin encounters a, quote, ancient creature in the lake. Imrys states that the creature claimed to be, quote, from another world and that it had been cursed by a Fae warrior to stay trapped within the lake. Who does that sound like?
That's Koshe! Crochet!
It's Crochet.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Shut up.
Quote, from another world, it had been cursed by a Fae warrior to stay trapped within the lake.
What?
We know that Crochet was similarly came from another world, and we know that he is, of course, cursed by a Fae warrior to stay trapped within the lake. We also do not know Crochet's true form, only that he appeared to Cassian and Azrael using an illusion. Okay?
Wait, an illusion?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, right, because he says smoke and mirrors. He was like, it's shadow, it's like smoke and mirrors.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Also, we know that Crochet can whisper to people.
Through the winds.
Right? We talked about that in Through the Winds. Right before Aelin encounters the lake creature, she could sense the light shifting on the lake, and then she heard her mother whispering to her so softly it was as if she dreamed it.
Kimberlyn!
Whispering. Whispering across the lake.
Whispering!
Come on.
What does this... What? What?
Has to be...
This is amazing.
Come on.
Whoa! Here we go. So do we think it's the same lake?
I don't know.
And somehow he's like traveling... No. I guess it would be the same lake.
Yeah.
But he's somehow traveling on...
Different planes of it, maybe.
Different stacked timelines, you know? Like,
right, exactly.
Or...
Oh, what?
Is this... Like, he's been trapped in this lake by this fae creature since TOG.
Maybe. Yeah.
This was him then.
Because remember, it's like he was older. He's older than, like, life itself.
Everything.
Everything.
Oh, my God. So that's maybe his origin story?
Right?
Shut up! Remind me in Air of Fire, do they, like, battle this thing? They never see it. They just, like, it's just a legend? Because there's a time when they go to the lake and she has to get the sword from something in the lake.
I don't think that's... I think that... I mean? No, that was, like, a monster. That was, like, an actual creature.
Right. That's not this.
Yeah, I don't think they battle this... I think they walk past it or something.
Oh my God.
Maybe. Or
this is incredible. This is incredible. I can't remember.
But yeah, described exactly the same.
Whoa, I love this. Okay.
I don't know. To me, that just sounds spot on similar to Crochet. That there's no way. I mean, it has to be.
Truly, we've made some far stretches in our past.
We have.
Cursed and bound to a lake is literally the... what else do you want us to do with that but think it's Crochet?
Right, exactly. We're only human.
How many other creatures are cursed and bound to a lake in common everyday life? Not many.
I would hope not many more, you know?
Just wow.
For their sake. It's fascinating.
That's fantastic. Wow, great job, great job.
Thank you. Okay, another creature... that we think might be tied to TOG is the Blue Anis.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, we know that the Blue Anis is one of the monsters that Cassian trapped in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Anis is described as having cobalt skin and iron claws, as well as a penchant for human female flesh.
Kay.
Now, this to us is giving Iron Teeth witches, especially because of the Blue Blood Clan.
Yeah.
There's a Blue Blood Clan within the Iron Teeth witches.
Blue... And
blue
cobalt skin, blue iron claws.
They like human flesh.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, checks all the boxes. It's somehow really fun to think about it tied together.
Agreed.
For sure.
I can't tell you how it ties together because they're not obviously spot on similar.
Yeah. Could just be a nod.
Like the iron claws and the blue, and then there's blue blood witches and TOG.
Yeah.
I don't
know. They want human flesh.
Right. Exactly.
I like the claws thing because I can just picture that so well from TOG.
Yes.
Really fun. And Blue Anis is the one that has scratched Cassian.
Yes. And when they're in the prison, when Nesta and Cassian go to the prison, they walk past a cell and there's like a scraping of the claws, and Nesta looks to Cassian and he pats his chest where had told her earlier that the Blue Anis had like scraped him, as if to be like, yeah, that's Blue Anis, like keep walking.
Yep.
So I don't know.
And it's just a fun tie, just a fun nod. That's what Mastermind's all about.
That's right.
Okay. So let's move on to one of the most discussed and most prevalent tie-ins from Akasoth to Hophas, and my God, there's a lot of them, but the eight-pointed star.
Yeah.
All right, so first and foremost, Bryce has this same eight-pointed star on her chest as Nesta and Cassian have on their back from the bargain.
Yep.
Truly, oh my God.
What more do you need?
It's an eight-pointed star on their physical bodies. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so Bryce's is a scar, and we know from Bryce that it came out, listen to this, quote, "When I revealed who I was, what I am to the world, I drew the star out of my chest." And I want you to think about when Nesta's appeared. It's when she made the bargain. But when she made the bargain is when she decides to train and like become who she's going to be and like find her own place in the world and like revealing who she is and becoming that person. I love that tie in
there.
For
sure. Oh, that's so fun.
And let's not forget Bryce's parting words to Nesta. My God, if this isn't telling. Quote, "I think that eight-pointed star was tattooed on you for a reason. Take that sword and go figure out why."
Come on. Come on.
If this isn't her reeling the dust core, I actually like really don't know what is. Speaking of, also, the eight-pointed star's on the floor of the prison, friends.
Yep.
It's there, dust court, on her back. There's also a very popular theory that they're starborn fae. Also leads into this. Is that what she's saying? It was tattooed on you for a reason. That the Archeron sisters are descended from Starborn Fae, which ties into this, of course, Bryce saying, that's tattooed on you for a reason.
Go figure out why.
Giving her the Star Sword, you know, it's just all tying together.
Agreed.
I do also want to mention, though, that we see an eight-pointed star in Throne of Glass.
What?
In reference to one of the priestesses. So this is in TOG chapter 37, quote, an eight-pointed star was tattooed upon her brow in a shade of blue that matched her gown, its sharp lines extending into her hairline.
What?
So it's the priestesses have it tattooed on their forehead in this religious ceremony.
Oh, that's fascinating.
If anything, I just think that ties into our, we find out in CC that like the mother and Erd and Word. And the cult, it's all like the same.
Yeah, right.
So I think eight-pointed star has deep meaning, and I think it is absolutely tied and important to Nesta and to the Dusk Court. I couldn't talk about this earlier, but my God, really what I think is going to happen here is Elaine's going to resurrect Spring and be the High Lady of the Spring Court, and that Nesta is going to be the Queen of the Dusk Court.
Yep.
Or High Lady. We just call her a queen so much.
We do. She's referred to as a queen a lot.
Yeah. And like how beautiful. She's death. Her power is death, but she like uses it to bring back to life this prison.
This prison that was used to be a court and it's been lost and like there's evil on it now.
Yes.
But like she finds a way to kind of bring it back to what it once was.
And like Bryce led her there and they, from her eight-pointed star, it's just like all clicking together. I did used to think that Elaine was going to be the one to resurrect the Dusk Court, the prison.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us thought that because of the mountains thing, because then each sister would have a mountain.
Yes.
And I agreed that would be beautiful, but I still like this better. So
I like it better. You're right, Christina. Yeah. The Starborn Fae is so fascinating, and I just can't wait to like
dive into that a little more.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to round out this episode with the phrase silver fire. Now, I need you to note that Sarah refers to Nesta's power as silver fire 18 times in this book. I went and typed it in with my little hands.
18.
And weirdly, silver flame is actually only said twice in the book itself, which was interesting. But silver fire is stated so many times. And Nesta notes that her silver flame comes from a, quote, colder, darker place, a place that was old and yet wholly new. Okay, what's interesting is that this is not the first time in the Massverse that we have seen silver fire. In Empire of Storms, our beloved Empire of Storms, chapter 35.
Oh, right.
When Deanna possesses Aelin at Skull's Bay. So like she possesses her body and Aelin like turns to them and like blinks. And Rowan notes, quote, cold white light, tendrils flickered, silver flame.
Oh my God. Not only is silver flame, it's cold. It's cold. Like she said, hers was cold.
A colder, darker place.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. And Rowan realized what the power in her hand was. Realized that the flame she would unleash would be so cold it burned. Realized it was the cold of stars, the cold of stolen light. Not wildfire, but moonfire.
Oh God, we got to break this down.
Okay, so let's break this down. Okay, so cold it burned. That is absolutely how Nesta's fire is described multiple times in the book. Like her power, it's flames, but it's cold flames.
Yes, especially when she has the nightmare.
Yeah, it's cold. Okay. Now, the cold of stars.
Stars.
Night Court.
Starborn Fae. Eight-pointed star.
Also, stolen light. I don't know. I think a lot of people associate stolen with Nesta because she stole something from the cauldron and she's like known for that.
Yeah, she stole.
So the stolen light, the cold of stolen light, like she stole something from the cauldron.
Because this silver flame, theoretically, she stole that from. That's
correct.
Like her power, she stole from the cauldron.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Wowee wow. And Deanna is a goddess.
Correct. Yeah. Now, I don't think that they're ancestors of each other.
No, but I think it's interesting that the mother made the cauldron, right?
Correct.
And then like the gods of TOG somehow being connected to the word Erd, mother.
Cauldron,
all that. But somehow then that kind of sense of power, a similar power being in the cauldron that she took.
Right.
Is really interesting.
She took the power almost of a god, like a god.
Yeah.
So fascinating.
This is so cool. Oh my God.
I just love a tie into TOG.
Anytime we will eat it up. The imagery, that I am now just obsessed with mentally, of Nesta looking up and having silver fire in her eyes and Aelin looking up and having silver fire in her eyes.
Yes.
Beautiful. I have chills.
Can you handle that?
No.
But yeah. That's it, guys.
How fun. What a fun Silver Flames day. What a fun Silver Flames episode.
Yeah.
We can't wait to see you guys next week. We have a lot to cover next week. It's going to be really, really super fun.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, guys.
Okay. We'll see you next time.
Happy reading.
Bye. Bye-bye. Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.